606 next Saturday, 7:30 PM, straight after commentary of Everton v Newcastle. Next up on Five Live, it's Stephen Nolan. 606 is a Shooting Sharp production for BBC Radio 5 Live. Good night, Christopher.
Good night, Rob. Good night. Bye.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
With the BBC News on 5 Live, I'm Alison Hughes. Israel's military says the strike that killed the Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah in Lebanon also took out 24 other members of the Iran-backed group. Israel is pressing on with its strikes against Hezbollah. Nasser Yassin, Lebanon's environment minister, says more people are leaving their homes.
For the past 20 hours, we've seen an exponential increase after the bombardment of the southern suburbs of Beirut. This is a crowded part of metropolitan Beirut, and almost everybody left their buildings and they went to the city of Beirut, to the main capital, but also to the neighboring towns, villages.
Israel also says it's carried out airstrikes on power plants and the seaport of Hodeidah in Yemen. The Israeli military said the sites were being used by the Houthis to transfer Iranian weapons and oil. An 8-year-old boy has died in Cumbria after being injured by a gun at a farm in the Walkup area. Our correspondent Fiona Trott says police and paramedics were called out yesterday.
They found an 8-year-old boy with serious injuries to his face and head. They also found a gun. They arrested a man in his 60s. He was arrested on suspicion of causing grievous bodily harm, and the boy was airlifted to hospital. Now, tragically, that 8-year-old died overnight, and the police have now told us that the man in custody is being questioned on suspicion of gross negligence manslaughter.
The former spy, Sergei Skripal, and his daughter, Yulia, have been told they do not need to appear in person to give evidence to a public inquiry into the Novichok poisonings in 2018. The pair were targeted with a nerve agent in Salisbury. The judge overseeing the inquiry said there was an overwhelming risk of the Skripals being attacked. The inquiry begins next month. The Conservative Party conference has opened in Birmingham. The four leadership candidates, Kemi Badenoch, Robert Jenrick, James Cleverly and Tom Tugendhat, are all there trying to win support. Our political correspondent Ian Watson has been listening to their early pitches for votes.
I think the areas where we're going to get the sharpest focus is going to be in issues such as immigration, Robert Jenrick setting out his stall this morning. But one of the reasons for that, although there are four contenders here, and only two contenders will then go forward to the party membership for the final ballot. So I think that's why some of them are focusing on issues they think the party membership in particular are concerned about.
The former Deputy Prime Minister, Sir Oliver Dowden, was questioned by the Gambling Commission earlier this summer over the alleged bets placed on the general election date by some Conservatives. The Commission is not investigating Sir Oliver and he did not place any bets. Projections in Austria show the far-right Freedom Party is heading for an unprecedented general election victory under leader Herbert Kickl. But the FPÖ is expected to win less than the majority it would need to govern. The other main political groups have said they'd refuse to work with the Freedom Party if it wins. That's the news. John Wilkinson has the sport.
Manchester United are 12th in the Premier League after a 3-0 defeat to Tottenham at Old Trafford. Captain Bruno Fernandes was red-carded when they were 1-0 down. Aston Villa missed the chance to go joint top of the league with a 2-2 draw at Ipswich. Rangers beat Hibernian 1-0 in the Scottish Premiership, whilst there were WSL wins for Manchester City, Manchester United and Arsenal. And in cricket, Australia have won the one-day international series in England 3-2. The deciding match was won by the tourists under DLS because of the rain in Bristol.
On Radio 4, the more you listen, the more you see.
We're living under more tyranny today than our founding fathers did in 1775.
A US presidential election is looming, but underneath, conspiracy culture rears its head once again. And nothing is as it seems.
All those things that we had feared our whole lives was coming true.
Burn the house down and start over. That seems to be the way.
It's America through the looking glass. Join me, Gabriel Gatehouse, as The Coming Storm continues. Listen on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Headliners. With Nihal Arthanayake.
Welcome to Headliners with me, Nihal Arthanaika. Well, it's actually called Headliners with Nihal Arthanaika, but I would have felt weird saying that, talking about myself in the third person, so I put with me, Nihal Arthanaika. I won't do that every week for obvious reasons. Anyway, last week's guests, Candice Brathwaite, author, superhuman, extraordinary influencer, so good. Jimmy Akinbola, actor, writer, activist, one of the stars, of course, of Bel Air, exec produced by Will Smith. I mean, come on, what a pairing that was last week. Talking of pairings, this week we have, in glorious eclecticism, as I like to bring you, the elite athlete, Olympian, and fashion icon, Dina Asher-Smith, followed by a man who was a musical prodigy as a child. From 5 years old, was composing, memorized the keys of a piano, where they were positionally, and pretended to play on a kitchen table until he actually got a piano. His name is Alexis French. Get in touch throughout the week. You can do that by emailing me, nihal@bbc.co.uk. In particular, we'd love your ideas for the ultimate encore questions. I have a set of questions, the only set of questions I have throughout the whole conversation are my encore ones. But always happy to get suggestions from you, feedback from you, ideas from you, favourite guests of yours that you've heard interviewed in a less than good way by someone else. And you know that I will do a better interview with them. Nihal, that is immodest of you. I don't care. It'll be better. Here until 10 p.m. on 5 Live.
Headliners with Nihal Arthanaika.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Dina Asher-Smith, Olympian, sprinter, 100 metres, 200 metres, 4x100-metre relay. Joy, passion, tears, devastation. It's all part of what makes Dina Asher-Smith a superstar in the world of sprinting. In fact, I don't know if she still holds it, but she once held the record for the world's fastest teenager. And my gosh, I mean, when it comes to British women and running and sprinting specifically, there's no record she hasn't broken. But we had a conversation not just about being an athlete, being super competitive. We talked about fashion, talked about family. We talked about all the things you can do when you've got the time to have a proper conversation.
Headliners with Nihal Arthanaika.
Hello.
Hi.
this is lovely to get to spend a lot of time with you. People were genuinely excited when I said I was interviewing you.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't feel like there's a lot of this of you around, like hour-long conversations, big conversations.
Not in the last few years, no, no, definitely not.
Is that a conscious decision? Have you just kind of gone...
A bit of both. Yeah, actually, I think it is because I think that... I think it was. I think I used to do a lot more of it, a lot more talk shows, a lot more podcasts, a lot more sit down TV, like a few years ago. But of late, I think just as you change as a person and who you want to be in this world kind of changes, I've become a lot more picky, both for my own, just like my great mental space, but also just my own choice of time. So when I look and when I get the request, if I look and it looks like it's going to be great and productive and there's just a space to be as well, then yeah, I'm here, you know?
Why this one? Why this one?
Oh, why this one? I think when I did a bit of research and also my manager and stuff looked into it, it was just a really kind, generous, honest and frank, but honest and generous space. And also my mum says that she knows it. She was a fan, so.
Yes.
That goes a long
Julie,
way as
thank
well.
You. Thank you, Julie. Thank you so much for blessing us. No, it does. If your mum says it, I mean, come on.
Yeah, I was chatting to her. She was like, oh, yeah, do that one. Do that one.
Oh, that's good. Thank you. I love the fact that between, it's Winston, your dad, Julie, that there's this kind of not a dark argument, but there's a like, oh, no, no, no. She got her running from me. So if you were to have to pinpoint it,
Your dad ran at school in Jamaica.
Yeah.
Your mum played hockey. She ran 800 metres. Is that right for her club?
Yeah, she did, for Herne Hill.
Right. So she ran for a club.
Yeah.
Your dad ran for his school.
I'm going to be really rude, you know. I'd arguably just say, like, either neither or a combination of both.
Don't say neither.
No.
But if you ever want food again or if you want to be welcomed into the family home again, Dina, don't say neither.
No, it's probably more a combination of both then. That's a better way to put it because they were both active and they're both uber competitive. But I say, I think the mental traits that go a long way in making you a great athlete, that is what I could probably pinpoint from both of them more than anything physical, if that makes sense.
Were you ever told you have to be twice as good in a country where you're a minority?
Absolutely.
Like, oh, you were?
Okay. Yeah, all the time. And that's not necessarily just by my parents, but I went to a very diverse school and I'm very fortunate that it's a great school. Lots of women that are doing fantastic things in the world have been there and come through there. It's definitely something that I'm conscious of, but also I think I just have a drive for excellence myself. Like when I actually want people to think of me, when they think of Dina, they just want to think if I'm in a space of work or a space of producing something, I want it to be of top class quality. And that is nothing to do with what I kind of heard when I was younger. I think that's just who I am and having high standards for myself.
Would you and I be sitting here if a little girl called Charlotte had bribed you with a bag of sweets?
It was an ice cream.
Was it an ice cream?
Yeah,
okay. If she hadn't bribed you and said, if you come to running, I'll give you an ice cream. Would you be sitting here today?
I actually don't know. I think there's a few people that definitely got me into athletics, but no. So yeah, for people that don't know, I was at primary school and I was like very active as a child. Like anyway, I'm a very energetic person. So my parents have always tried to just, you know, channel my energy into stuff that would make me go to sleep at night. Parents probably understand.
Operation Exhaust, yeah.
Dina. I was Operation Exhaustion. Like one of those kids that's always smiley and happy, cartwheels, running around, parents exhausted. So I used to do dancing, dive, like platform diving, like Tom Daley, swimming. I was playing a musical instrument, doing French classes. Yeah, so I was doing a lot already. So at my primary school, they made like a new running club. It was a relatively small primary school. And like one of the girls that I was friends with wanted to go. And I was like, oh my gosh, no. Because when I thought of running, I always thought of like cross country, mud, Mo Farah, all of that stuff. And I was thinking, absolutely not. She was like, okay, if you go with me, I'll get you an ice cream after school. So I was like, that sounds like a fair trade. I was eight. Like, obviously, that's a pretty good bet. Yeah. Yeah. And then the rest is kind of history. I got signed up for competition.
Yeah, but you did end up having to do cross countries, didn't you?
I did. That's what I mean. So in the moment, the ice cream was completely worth it. But then I got signed up for a cross country competition. And then I remember thinking, oh, I need more than one ice cream, mate. Like,
but you came, did you come fifth out of about 300 or 400
kids? Yeah, wow, you've done so much research. Look at me. I mean, obviously, because this is your job, so
don't worry, I'll turn up at your next race and go, no. Oh, you've done so much running.
You can tell I haven't done these in a while. But I came fifth. I remember, I think my mum, at that time I had a Nintendo GameCube and I was not on it. I remember it was at Crystal Palace. It was like either January or November. It was cold. My mum came there to take me. I had a little orange woolly hat on. I just remember being like, mum, I'm not in the mood. And mum's like, come on, man, you're representing your school. Like, you're one of however many for their quota doing this. Let's just get this done. I'll get you that computer game that you want if you finish. And let's just, you never have to do this again if you don't want to do it. And I was like, okay, man, like, when you've entered to represent something, you follow through.
Yeah.
And that was like, I made a commitment. I was right. But I have to admit, like at that time, honestly, the idea of running in the cold, I was not happy. I was not happy. And I was running and I wasn't like trying to win, if that makes sense. I was trying to finish.
You did more than that.
No, I remember.
Come on, you don't come fifth.
It gets even worse. So I remember I must have got like almost to the end. I wasn't aware it was the end because I had no idea how far it was. I didn't walk the course to everybody. Like I was too cold. I was getting a hot drink with my mom. Like I was just not on it overall. And I remember I saw a marshal, like one of those people in the high-vis jackets making sure that you go the wrong way or don't take shortcuts. And I literally stopped and talked to her because I was like, I'm so tired. I can't do this. Like I felt like I had blood in my mouth because I had never done long distance running before. I didn't know that was normal. I thought I was dying. She was just shouting at me like, keep going, you know, full of great energy. And I just remember being like, oh, they're not listening to me. And then I just like continued jogging. And then I came fifth. That was a surprise. I remember just being like, oops.
So wait a minute. Do you remember the feeling of how it felt to be that good at something? Like off the bat, all right, you weren't first, second, third, but out of a field of hundreds, you're in the top five.
I think I'd always been quite sporty and I knew that I was fast. So whether I didn't really understand how that would affect my life, but I just, you know, like everybody knows if they're fast or not. So I kind of knew that I could do it, but I wasn't consciously going out and do it. Okay. But it did feel good. It felt like an incredible sense of achievement, particularly as I remember I was like, I stopped and I was thinking, oh, maybe if I'd actually like attacked this, I could have actually done a bit better. But that was only a small thought at that time. The big thought was happy that it was done.
Okay, right. So I'm a fly on the wall, right, in your living room. You're 8 years old. The Athens Olympics is on.
Yeah.
Right. What happened to you? That was
awesome. I remember that. That actually left such a mark with me. So I remember watching and I didn't really understand what the Olympics were. And my parents were describing it like, yeah, it's this thing that happens every 4 years. The people that are phenomenal at anything from athletics to rowing to sailing, they all come together and they come together to find out who's the best. And that to me, who was a competitive child, always been brought up in a competitive household. We were competitive with cards, with dominoes, with every sort of game.
What was Monopoly like?
Oh, gosh, can't even talk about that. But we do that at Christmas. We've got like loads of editions of Monopoly.
That must get
Yeah, it is.
Brutal.
Even at Christmas, even literally every year, we've now got the one that's like a decoder with fake money. Yeah, there's another edition. We're a hugely competitive household. There was like, in my living room, there was like a whole big bookcase and like one side of it was all like board games. So I was, they don't play dominoes with me anymore, you know. We stopped playing dominoes as a family when I was 15 because I started winning. Look how competitive I am. All my uncles, my grandma, everything.
Oh, so you're playing with the old school Jamaican, yeah. That domino culture, which is big.
But I started winning and they're so competitive, they stopped playing with me. They will. This is what I'm trying to say. When I talk about things that I get from my parents, the mental skills that you need to be a great competitor and a great athlete, I think I would weigh that more than anything physical. Both of my parents are incredibly competitive. My whole family were incredibly competitive.
Does it turn to rows ever? Has it, like people getting up and storming off?
No, because we're all
no-one's
like
ever flipped
hearted.
Over the Monopoly board.
No, we've had people stop playing. But like, no, but it's all lighthearted. Like, we're very humorous.
Okay.
I think that's how I'm okay in sport. Like, obviously, I want to win and I will push myself. But because we're very smiley, happy, humorous people. So it's never at that extreme. But still, I want to win. And even though I'm the child, even though I was younger or my grandma was 90, 80 years old, we wouldn't let anybody have anything. But it's all with a good laugh.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
Okay, so it does, but I wonder if that's scarier. Because the thing is, that's lulling people who don't know you into like, hey, yeah, I'll go play dominoes with Dina. I mean, she's got that smiley face. What's she going to be? I mean, it's not as if she's some like ruthless domino.
I get that a lot though. So I think mainly among, not necessarily British, because I think the British people understand, like, they know me. And also, as a British sports person, you can be ultra competitive and have that almost killer instinct on the field of play while still being incredibly polite, incredibly courteous and everything. And I think as I moved to America and the American media, they don't kind of get it because I think they kind of expect people, if you are that level of competitive, they want to see it. But I'm like, no, I can greet you. I can shake your hand. I can give you a hug. If you beat me, I can be happy for you in that moment. Doesn't mean that next time I'm going to try and, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think that's scarier, but I think it's just being able to detach, being competitive with respect for the people that you're playing with, or if it's my parents, or playing a game with. So I think it's just having that sense of perspective and also friendly respect and understanding that sport, we are not in a battlefield. Right. We are playing a game. Like, I can try and win again tomorrow, but nobody here is dying. Nobody here is a bad person. It's just I'm trying and you're trying. Sometimes it's my day. Sometimes it's your day. We can keep it moving.
Okay, but that's really interesting then, because how long was it until you realised not everyone was like that?
You know what? I think it was my first brush with when I probably was about 16, 15, because I'd grown up in, yeah, my family was very friendly, competitive. I realised that, like, I started, not losing friends is a strong word, but, like,
I mean, you did, right?
Or, like, it's not necessarily friends, but it's, like, understanding that there's a limit to friendships that can be made sometimes if you're competitive. When you retire, everybody said, I think it might have been Michael Johnson or one of the older British athletes. When I remember at that age, it's like, don't take your competitive relationships too seriously, because when it's all said and done and it does go quicker than you think, these are the only people in the world that knows what it's going to be like to compete during COVID, to compete in a stadium full of 80,000 people, train so hard and it doesn't go well, but also train so hard and you have the best day of your life. So don't take these competitive, you know what I mean? Yeah, these people are the only people that are in the boat with you, and you're going to need to relate at some point, because nobody in this world is going to get it.
Right.
Or like,
but not everyone thinks that way, right?
No. But I started, and but I kind of took that and I was like, cool, yeah. But it's naturally quite easy for me to do that. So I was like, sweet, yeah. But yeah, I think when it was about 15, 16, it starts to get a bit more serious. Like, if you win a race, then next thing you get sponsored, somebody else doesn't. Or you get a spot on an international team and something doesn't. When the consequences start to get a bit higher, you do understand that that element of, it's not the same for everyone. And that can be for a multitude of reasons. It doesn't mean that anybody's a bad person. It just means every single person's journey and every single person's moment means something different to them. Because particularly if something, somebody's trying to just, they've started in not such a great situation, that's a way out. That's an option to change their life. That's an option to feed a table, feed a family. So that's when you understand this means different things to everyone. Therefore, I never take people's reactions to heart.
Right. Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, in the most, you don't know.
You don't know. No. And like, I'm very lucky that I brought up in a household where, you know, Domino's was like cutthroat. So I'm, but at the same time, not everybody's life and reality has always been like that. So I've never taken anything personally.
Okay. I've heard a phrase of yours recently.
Oh, gosh.
Run angry.
Oh.
Right? I ran angry.
Yeah,
right?
I shouldn't do that.
Right? Okay, so that's, but that's interesting, isn't it? Because if someone's running for survival in many ways, right? This means something, not just for them, but it means they can take their family out of poverty.
Yeah,
they can
exactly.
do all these kind of things. What is the best word you could put after run?
Depends on who you are. Depends on who you are.
For
me,
Dina.
I'm relaxed, I'm calm, okay. chill, having a great day. Didn't even think about the running. Just line up, think about one or two things. Gun goes, whew, yeah.
Wow.
I'm relaxed.
So zen-like. You've
zen,
got to be-
very zen. That's a great word for me, zen. That's why I always have a try and have a great race day. Zen, listen to my music, because for me to run faster, because of the way my technique is, I just always try and relax, and then I run faster when I'm relaxed. It depends on who you are and how you work as a person and what uniquely and psychologically gets the best out of you in that scenario. But yeah, I can't run angry. I cannot. Does not work for me. Absolutely not. I need to run zen, relaxed, calm, floating on water.
No baggage.
None. I don't do baggage. No.
But how do you train your mind to, in those seconds, because it's only seconds
it
you
is,
have,
on
right?
a good day.
On a good day.
If it goes into minutes,
yeah,
we're
having never
a terrible
gonna go,
day.
It never,
we're
ever,
having a really
ever
bad
gonna
day.
Go into minutes. I mean, I'm looking at your figures here. What is it? 100 metres, 10.83. 200 metres, 21.88. 4 times 100, 41.77. So by 42 seconds, it's done. The day's
done.
Oh,
thank God. Yeah.
Right, the day's done.
Actually, technically, less than 30, because even if it's a relay... I'm running less than that.
Yeah, of course you are. Of course you are. Yeah, so it's less than that. You're absolutely right.
Oh, yeah, 30 seconds. My workday's done.
Yeah, your workday's done. So you can't... But how do you teach yourself to do that? So I'll come here, talk to you. My wife and I may have had a massive row in the morning. We didn't, thankfully. All kinds of madness is going on, because that's life.
Life, yeah.
Right? How have you trained yourself to stop life from infecting, as it were, your ability to do what you do?
First, you can never do that as a human being. Like athletes, we love to think of ourselves as machines sometimes, but we're not. I don't believe that you can stop life, but you can do your best to be honest with yourself, identify it, and then work to mitigate whatever effect that's happening, in my opinion. Some people remove themselves from like chaotic situations. So like they'll go in holding camps, training camps, they'll do a media blackout, they'll do this, do that to mitigate any factors that could distract or impact performance. But we're human beings. I don't think you can ever stop life having an effect. When you say, where do you get it from like which of your parents, I think I'm testament to being a balance of two, the both of them mentally. But my dad is very cool, calm and collected, very hard to get him unnerved. If you were to meet him, he would be likely to kind of introduce himself, have a little giggle, but be very cool, calm and collected. And my mum is full of energy, very much like takes up a room and incredibly engaging. And I like to think of myself as down the middle, and I kind of borrow traits mentally from them to help me like just perform and be excellent, along with stuff I've learned along the way.
But what when, Dina, people who do my job expect, as soon as a microphone goes in front of you, that you are the mum, Dina, right?
The like, mum?
No, I mean your mum, your mum's
oh,
daughter, right?
Yeah, you're not a mum. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't know about that.
That would be gossip. That would be gossip that I get sued for.
News to me.
Yeah, exactly. It's news to you. Oh, wait a minute. It was on the internet. Yeah. Must be true. No, like you take after your mum, that part of her, the lighting up the room part of her.
Oh,
it's expected
you.
For you to be able to, because you do that,
yeah.
Right? You do that. And you switch it on.
I think I'm a balance of both.
Right, okay.
My dad, like...
What is when you don't feel like switching? So, for instance, post-Paris, what was really jarring to me when I was reading a lot of it was how upset you were, right?
Yeah, I was
right?
Very
of
upset.
Not getting up into the 100 meters. And this kind of, oh, she walked off from an interview. She cried and she walked off from an interview. And it felt like, okay, at that moment, something quite extraordinary has happened to you emotionally.
I was not having a great day.
Right. And yet
not having
you're
a great day.
Almost still expected to perform, to stand there and talk it out. And you haven't processed it yourself.
Yeah, and
at
I
that
think
point.
At that point I was in the middle of the 200 as well. Like I was determined not to let my disappointment from the one affect how I perform in the
it
two.
Can't.
So in that moment it just wasn't conducive to my performance to rehash kind of what happened, even though it was literally the day before. I had my performance hat on, and as soon as I felt myself getting upset, I had to remove myself from that environment in the most respectful way possible. Mainly because I didn't have time to be upset in that regard. Like I was still in the middle of the Olympics. You have like the days or the weeks when everything's done to be as upset if you'd like and process it and do all that. But my job in that moment as an athlete and representing myself, representing my country, is to put my best performance together for the 200. And I just knew that I had to remove myself from that situation. And I did respectfully go, I'm not a rude walk-off person.
No.
But I just had to. Like I owed it to all the hard work that I'd done. I owed it to the caliber of athlete that I am to put myself in the best mental headspace to put together a good 200 meter performance. So I couldn't have that about the one anymore.
Is that what was going through your head as you walked away?
Yeah, like as soon as you found yourself going,
right.
Getting upset,
right.
And it was like kind of, it was more reactive because I think my mentally, I was very much in the two. I hadn't even got upset about the one until that point, because mentally I'm just very good at rolling with it and I just really hadn't processed it. But when you're kind of in the moment being asked to reflect, when this is not the time to reflection, that's when all the emotions that I didn't even expect for myself started to come out. And I was like, this is not the time. This right now is
right.
Not the time. We can
right.
do that in a week.
Yeah.
But right now, today, aujourd'hui, when I need to go home, rest, ice bath, recover, eat, sleep, nap, that long performance to-do list, this is not the time to be sad. Oh, no.
It's interesting. A woman such as yourself who's experienced so much success, it's still true that you can be ambushed by your own emotions.
Absolutely. And I think also that is your own emotions, your own passion and your own belief in yourself, and therefore disappointment when it doesn't go your way. All the positive things that come up to that point is also why you're a great athlete. Like you believe you work hard, you're very passionate, you're driven, you're dedicated, and you believe in, yeah, outsiders have ultimate belief in your ability to perform. It goes both ways. It's a complete package, you know?
Is it important, do you think, for little girls who are looking at an Olympics like you did,
yeah.
And you were 8 years old,
yeah.
Looking at Athens, to see you cry?
Mate, I actually think it is, but mate, I wish it wasn't me.
Right. Why?
Yeah, well, I would just rather have had a good one. Do you know what I mean?
No, for sure.
But that's
sure.
Basically what I mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, because whenever I'm in a space where I'm doing work with people or companies like Barbie or whatever, and they're talking about being I hate the word positive role model, but if we're being honest, just a positive role model. I think when it comes to what is important to display is just authenticity. It's to know that as a woman, you can go and yeah, you can go and be successful in so many avenues, whatever you want, blah, blah, blah. But it's not always going to be easy. It's not always unicorns, sunflowers, roses. And that is just the reality of life. Elite sport one, but it's always life. Like, you know, things go up and down, and but it's not necessarily what the downs look like, but it's definitely how you carry yourself in that moment and also how you pick yourself up and what you do after that. So I'm just very authentic because I mean, I haven't got anybody to be but myself. And also if I'm not happy, I'm not happy. That's the end of that. And I have high standards for myself. Absolutely. And if I didn't meet them, I will be disappointed and I'm not going to hide it. I'm not going to be disrespectful to anybody. I would never, ever, ever do that. But like, that's it really.
Dina, we are going to take a break for some news and sport and we're going to come back and talk to you more, not about news, maybe a little bit about sport.
Hopefully not news.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
With the BBC News on 5 Live, I'm Alison Hughes. Lebanon's Prime Minister Najib Mikati says continuing Israeli attacks may have forced 1 million people from their homes. Israel has kept up its bombardment of targets in Lebanon after assassinating Hezbollah's leader Hassan Nasrallah on Friday. The Israeli military has now expanded its operation against Iranian allies, bombing Houthi targets in Yemen. Israel said the targets, including a seaport, were being used by the Houthis to transfer weapons and oil from Iran. Police are investigating the death of an 8-year-old boy on a farm in Cumbria. Officers were called out to the farm yesterday afternoon. They seized a firearm and arrested a man in his 60s. And campaigners say the use of police dogs should be phased out because they say that too often their welfare comes second to other priorities. The animal charity PETA wants safer, modern policing technology to be used by forces instead. That's the news. John Wilkinson has the sport.
Thank you. Tottenham overcame the absence of Son Heung-min to beat Manchester United at Old Trafford this evening. Their 3-0 win made it 4 victories in a row in all competitions for Spurs. As for United, they had captain Bruno Fernandes sent off at 1-0 down, and it is now their joint worst start in the Premier League after 6 games. Here's how Chris Sutton assessed it on 6:06 earlier.
Why were they like still in warm-up mode when the game started? That's totally unacceptable. I mean, Ten Hag now has spent over £500 million, third season, and that's Manchester United? Is that what Manchester United fans want, for them to be deemed a cup team? 2 months down the line, 3 months down the line, do you see Ten Hag, he's been there a long time, making a massive improvement? I don't. Mm-hmm.
Earlier, Aston Villa could have gone joint top of the table, but were held to a 2-2 draw at Ipswich. Rangers won in the Scottish Premiership, beating Hibernian 1-0, whilst in the Women's Super League there were wins for Manchester City, Manchester United and Arsenal, whilst Chelsea against Manchester United next weekend has been called off. It's because of a conflict with the Blues' European schedule. To rugby union, and England women are starting the defence of their WXV1 title against the USA in Vancouver. Our rugby reporter Sarah Orchard is watching.
Yes, they're just getting underway in Vancouver right now. England, of course, defending their WXV1 title. Alex Matthews of Gloucester Hartbury skippers the Red Roses for the first time. They've also got two debutantes in the form of Bristol Bears centre Phoebe Murray, also Loughborough Lightning wing Beau Westcombe-Evans in the mix. Zoe Harrison is starting at fly half for them. Just 2 minutes on the clock. It's USA 0, England 0.
And you can watch on the BBC Sport website, iPlayer and Red Button. Also in rugby, Bath beat Leicester Tigers by 20 points to 15 in the Premiership. And England's cricketers have lost their one-day international series against Australia. Today's match in Bristol was abandoned because of rain, with the tourists well in control in their run chase. The final result was a 49-run win under DLS. But England's interim head white ball coach Marcus Trescothick has been impressed with how Harry Brook has handled the standing captaincy.
He sees it well, he reads the game nicely, and I think the way that he's captain on the pitch, some of the field settings and decision-making has been really positive. And, you kind of like the way that he's gone about it within the guys. Quite quiet, unassuming, but just gets the job done, everything you want him to do.
There's much more in the latest TMS podcast on the BBC's Sounds app right now. And Mark Selby leads John Higgins by 7-4 in the final of Snooker's British Open. That's taking place in Cheltenham.
Welcome to the Tooney and Russo show on BBC Sounds. I am here with two of football's most famous friends, Alessia Russo and Ella Toon.
Remember when you scored and you did like five different celebrations?
Yeah, I scored and I did all sorts. Hands went up, hands went out, a jump. It's not so awkward.
Someone's given them to a podcast. Are you joking?
It was like the best 3 years ever. I think I came back a bit Americanized.
Yeah, she did.
She started saying these mad words. Soccer. They'd like have this like American accent. They've been there a month.
The Tooney and Russo show with me, Vic Hunt.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Headliners. With Nihal Athanayake.
Dina, welcome back. Again, no conversation about news. Definitely conversations about sport. As you progress, what becomes important to you outside of personal bests?
That's a great question. I think I've only just moved coach this year. Like, I've moved to a new setup. It's the first time I've ever moved in my entire career.
Wow. So you've
We had a big year. That's why, even though I wasn't happy with the Olympics, it has been a big year. Yeah. And I was fortunate enough to be in such a great space with my previous coach, John, for 19 years.
Yeah, like, he's been with him
a long time. Yeah. I love him. And I moved to Texas, moved to the Sun, new group, new training program, new race calendar, new flying around the world to do races rather than being based in London. Lots and lots and lots of, and a new approach to competition, a new approach to championships. That's kind of been the focus of my year, like working out what works for me and what doesn't. Yeah, like it's really reevaluated what I can do in this sport and kind of how good I can be, which I think is why I was a bit frustrated as well with the Olympics, when you kind of have an eye-opening moment and kind of like a mental awakening, if that makes sense, that like I can go and do more things than I previously thought was feasible for myself, was possible.
When you say more things, do you mean within the scope of the 100 meters?
Yeah,
and the
within the two,
okay.
One, two, the okay. relays, all
okay.
of that.
Okay.
So still on track.
Right, okay.
So yeah, it could be personal best. It can be medals. It can be winning multiple medals, multiple championships, all of those things. When you kind of have an eye-opening moment and you reevaluate where you see yourself in that space, then yeah, you want more for yourself. But
that's,
I don't want to
so
go too much into detail with it. I'm not one to throw all my goals out there because I'm just one of those ones. I keep it to myself
and then
quietly work away
for
at
sure.
it.
But look, we know from your reaction to not making the finals of the 100 meters how much you still want this.
Oh yeah.
Right? It wasn't like, I'm tailing off. I'm coming to the end. This is like, it is what it is.
And like, no, like I'm not, like I'm in PB shape. Like I've had some great races towards the end of the season, like almost ran a new British record. Like,
yeah.
So that's why I was frustrated. If I wasn't, that's what I was saying to my new coach as well, because he was disappointed. I was disappointed. And I was like, look, the reason why I am so frustrated in this moment is because we've made so many changes this year. So many things could have gone wrong when you move or like halfway across the world, new training program. I could have been injured. I could have been having a terrible time and had to come home halfway through. I could have not made the team, not made it to the championships. You know, when everything's thrown up into the air, so many things can go wrong. And when everything doesn't go wrong, and then something small happens, that's when you get a bit frustrated, as you can understand, when you overcome so many things in such a good way, and then it's something really small at the end.
Wow, yeah.
Which is why, yeah, I'm disappointed and frustrated, but also, besides that, I've actually had a great year. Like, we won Euros double gold again. We've run fastest I ever ran over the two coming into a major championships, like 22-0. I've run multiple 10-8s, like, in a row, second in the Diamond League. Broke the 300 record,
right.
Broke part of the 4x1
right.
record. Like,
right.
Just one day.
What happened on that day, then?
It was just, honestly, it was, like, I just... where I made mistakes. Like, that's literally it. Like, I've got nothing.
From when the gun went off or before?
No, before in the warm-up area. Like, you run with too much tension and you don't run fast. Like, that's it. Came out and did well in the two the next day, did great in the 4x1. Like, yeah, it was nothing to do with my capacity of what I was capable of.
No.
I just went around that I made a mistake. I went around it in the wrong way.
August 2012. You're a kit carrier and you're watching Super Saturday happen in front of you. But interestingly,
You're looking at the audience reaction to
I
that,
was,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now that you're in that situation where you know you can make their evenings,
yeah,
right? You can bring joy to their lives, yeah. This feeling of exhilaration.
It's really nice.
It is, but it can also be a burden.
No, I love it. I was having this conversation with, I'm not going to name names, but one of the athletes did really well in the women's one at the Olympics. She's a bit younger and she was like, oh, there's a lot of pressure now. And I was like, it's a blessing. Honestly, it's such a blessing. I don't think like we have, there's not many opportunities in life that by just doing what you're good at and doing what you do, you can bring joy to other people. I don't think so. I think that's a gift. Like so many people, they're out saving lives. They've got jobs that are such high risk, I think, in a way that you can, if you make a mistake, it can be really bad, you know. And if I make a mistake, I lose and I'm not having a good day. And people turn off their TV and they go, oh, bless her. And then they move on with their day. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
I don't see it as a pressure and a burden, but I see it as just a wonderful position to be in and such an incredible opportunity that not many people in life get to experience. And like when I talk to people who are just coming up and they might be have, and don't get me wrong, it's taken me a few years to get to that mindset and see it for what it is. Because like people just want you to do well. I think that's track and field in the UK. People just actually want you to do well. They want you to do well for yourself, for your family, for people around you, for them, for the country. But they just want you to do well. It's a very friendly sport. I don't see that as pressure. I see it as such a joyful part of what I do. There's not many times in life where you can kind of do something and you can bring light to somebody's day. In achieving my dreams, I can also make somebody have a great... Isn't that great? Like, honestly, that is a really great way to be living a part of your life.
Is it scary, the thought of falling in love with someone when you know that... So, for instance, the one thing that can unsettle me more than anything else, I can be in any interview, I can interview any person, I can
I'm
go
like,
for
this
anything.
This is taking a left turn.
No, but the why I'm interested in is because of focus. Being in love with someone does irrational things. It can affect
absolutely.
You and undermine you in ways that no amount of personal bests or reading a race or it can't, right? So
very destabilizing.
It's right.
It can
so,
be.
Right, it can be, right? So how do you marry those two things? I remember once speaking to someone who was a recording artist and successful in the Asian music scene. And I remember them saying that their partner hated their artist name because their artist name was something different. They had to be someone different. Part of the sacrifice of doing what you do, and I don't need to tell you at all, is missed birthdays, missed anniversaries, missed like, you know, you can't just go, oh, let's go to the cinema tonight. Or you definitely can't go, let's go and eat whatever we want tonight.
No,
right?
Especially like, now I live in Texas.
Right,
like,
right.
I miss a lot of my friends' stuff,
so,
yeah.
So how do you balance the need for success and what that takes with, I guess it's going back to the sacrifice question about having someone to share it with?
I think it just has to be right. I think it just has to be the right one and it has to make sense and they have to understand what you do and you have to have space. So whether that means that you're both hyper busy people, you're both in the same space, or that's somebody who just is so empathetic and has an incredible yeah. understanding, it just has to be right. If it's wrong, oh, it can be, as with any walk
yeah,
in
yeah,
life,
yeah.
it can be
you
not so
spot
great.
That early, right?
You've got to spot it very early. You've got to be vigilant. You've got to be like a little, yeah. got a little laser beam going on.
Should athletes date other athletes or is that like a...
I think everybody would have a different answer to that question. I think right. it depends on your personality, honestly. But to be successful, I think it just has to make sense. It has to be right.
It seems like talking to you and change of coach and all that, that you're into this completely new phase of your career.
New era.
Right,
and this,
okay.
for me, this was like year one, even though it is ultimately the end of a cycle for like Olympic cycle,
of course
it's actually year one,
right?
So for year one overall, like, it's pretty good.
Yeah
minus the actual day. Been healthy, I have not been hurt for the whole year. Then
yeah.
training's working, I've completely switched training programs, completely switched lifting programs, and it's been great. Like, it's honestly year one been pretty good.
And then, but then of course,
so year two,
that's
year three,
saying.
Year four gets better. That's when you just go, oh, I'm excited for
and
LA.
And you've got to peak for LA, right?
Yeah, that'll be fine. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, coming to the athletes' world, everything's a bit different.
Yeah.
Tokyo, this was a weird cycle. Like, it was 3 years long. So it was a shorter cycle than most because of COVID pushed the Olympics back.
Also, as well, being an American in election year, How weird is that?
It's fascinating.
Is it really?
Well, I did history at uni.
I know you did. And, you, so and one of your favourite modules was American history,
literally,
wasn't it?
I find it fascinating.
It's so been, you're I'm in Austin. You've got a front row seat. I mean, you're in Texas.
I'm in Texas. Front row seat, Austin, very democratic.
Are you
going
to be there when the election happens
in
November?
Yeah, I start training October 30th, so yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's like a week before.
Yeah, but I've always been very, just as obviously more from an educational standpoint and being, king. Yeah, so I've got a kind of academic head, even of though course. I do sports. Been really interested in that, and it's just been very fascinating seeing how that country functions. Like, I've missed London a lot. I love the sunshine. I love the easy breezy way of life, and that I think being in a sunny climate brings. I love the food, the culture of Texas. I think it's far more cultured than I think it is actually even portrayed, which is a bit of a shock in the most respectful and lovely way.
Yeah,
but oh God, I love London. I'm a Londoner.
Have you had the, I wonder if that still happens, because it happened to a few of my friends when they went out to America, which was, y'all have black people in the UK?
Yeah, all the time.
You still get that?
Yeah.
That's amazing. In 2024.
When you talk, they're like, oh my God, they're like, where are you from? I'm like, London. They're like, wow, which is so, but I think that's what I've also enjoyed in a really, because at the beginning, you're just like, what?
Yeah.
But so many people in that country, they have this very, they're not as cynical, particularly maybe in the South. They're not as cynical. They're, everything is this kind of wonder.
Yes.
And it's like, it's quite refreshing.
Yeah.
And there's this like palpable optimism and just joy as well, where they're going kind of just, they're living in their little bubble, going on about their day. There might not have been stuff in the world that they've been exposed to, but when they are, there's not necessarily skepticism. It's just like, wow, that's cool. I never knew that. And I think coming from London, the UK, kind of going into a place where, I mean, obviously not everyone. Austin is also very diverse, very corporate, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also kind of really cute to be able to, like, just talk to people quite frankly and widen their world and widen their opinions of the world, especially if you're, like, in the back of a taxi or you're getting a coffee or something like that.
Yeah.
They're like, and they love a chat. They will hold up the whole line for a chat. And like at first,
especially
again,
in Texas,
exactly. And at first,
New
coming
York,
from London, New York, no, it's not going to happen.
But, why are you talking to me?
Literally.
I don't want to talk. Why are you talking to me?
Literally, they'll be like, next, bye. Probably won't even notice that you're not from here. But Texas, they're like, oh, good morning. How are you? Wow, where are you from? How did you find your way here? That is so interesting. What do you do? How is your day? Like, it's, and coming from London, you know, when I you know, you're part of the rat race. So it's like, you're like, at the first, you're like, oh my gosh, like, I haven't got long for this. But then I started taking a step back and, you know, you're like, you know what? I do have time for a chat. I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. And they brighten your day. You brighten their day. And then you go off.
So this is
and
a,
your day's a bit,
okay.
My perspective on a lot of things have changed.
Yeah, this is Dina Asher-Smith 2.0.
I've grown a lot, in a very short space of time. It's been, like, really interesting. Even being inside my own head.
Yeah.
Again, not bringing back to the end, but that's why, again, I went in with an older mentality, which doesn't fit my new mental personality.
Right. So this is quite a cynical question. Are you telling yourself this as a form of mantra to manifest it, or is that actually, it's just who you are
it's
right
just,
now?
No, it's just
where
the,
you are.
It's not even who I am. It's just a fact. Like, I know it sucks, but you know when it's like, if you make a mistake, you rectify it and you move on. Like, that's all you can do.
Yeah, of course.
There's no point getting more sad
about it. I'm talking
about
the 2.0. I'm talking about the new you. I'm talking about whether the things that you're not
I wouldn't necessarily characterise myself, like, because, I mean, you're always the same person, but, like, I've just made a lot of changes. And, again, they're changes that I've never made before. And I'm just...
Are those changes dietary? Are those changes?
All of them, because you move to a new country.
Right.
Everything.
Yeah, you can't eat Texas barbecue
every
day.
No, you can't, even though you might feel like it.
And their portions are...
Yeah, new everything, you know? It's just, that's why maybe...
Are we losing you then?
No. I'm a Londoner, don't be silly.
Okay.
I enjoy the sun now and again. Come on, who doesn't?
Come on, who doesn't? Well, you're a tropical kid as well,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, who doesn't? But I don't know, I think sometimes... I think I was having this thing with, I was having this conversation with, like, my friends, and I don't know how to put this in the right way. I think sometimes when people I think some people have been like, are you actually okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine.
Right. And then they ask again.
Yeah, no, I know. And I just know it's lovely because there is this place of concern and I know what they saw on TV. But I'm like, baby, I'm good. Like, I run in the straight line for a job. Sometimes it goes my way. Sometimes it doesn't. Like, I will be one of 8,000 people that was disappointed with their Olympic Games. The only people that are incredibly happy are the people that win. Or maybe the bronze medal if that was a big jump for them. But like very few people leave those things feeling like they did everything right. I am one of many. I wear my heart on my sleeve. So it became a news story. Oopsie. Right. Yeah. But I mean, I'm not going to apologize for being me, but you know what it is. Oh. But no, like, you know what I mean?
So it's amazing because, you know, years ago, women sprinters really peaked in their mid-20s, but that is done now,
but I think, I think the landscape is very much changing and it's a joy. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that I have to go and do that, but it does just like broaden how you see your, how you see your career, how you see yourself. Can I see myself running at 40 around there? Just, I don't think I can, just mainly knowing my own, knowing me and knowing all of these things. But I think if also, if you ask them, at that certain age, and I've had many conversations with them, they would have been like, yeah, no way, I didn't see that happening. But then I just kept getting faster. And if your body is healthy and you keep getting faster, you've got the rest of your life not to run.
So you've not set retire at this age, married by this age, kids by this age, none
of
those things.
I'm not that kind of person. I'm a bit more fluid. I'm a bit more, see what happens, go with the flow. I've never really been that girl. I've never been that kind of girl that's had like, you know, the dream visions of like when and all that. I've just kind of been, see what life brings.
Life's bringing good things.
Fingers crossed, touch wood.
Must be mad when a whole country is concerned about you. That must be so
weird. No, it's cute. I think, but then that is when you bring it back. It's so lovely to be like, one of the people they care about.
That's
what I was, I keep trying to explain this to people. And I think maybe because I've done a few years that I can have a little bit more perspective and reflection. Like, it's nice. Like, things will not go your way all the time or like you want them to. And maybe you're one of those people where it does, where congratulations, I'm really happy for you. But if not, that is life. It's okay. Keep pushing, keep trying, always be respectful, be polite and just try your best and keep it moving and try, just keep trying your best. That's all you can do. Not trying to be a live, laugh, love girl, but like, it is true. Like,
it's a little bit like that.
It is incredibly like that. But I think when you just kind of have, I was about to say, this is going to get really airy-fairy, but when you just honestly put your best forward with honesty, integrity, and you just try and do your best, what happens, happens. And I've just always wanted to be one of those people, that when all is said and done, I look back and say, in that moment, with the cards that life was dealt to me and the knowledge that I had at that time, I did my best. With hindsight, would I have done things differently? Absolutely. But we don't have the gift of hindsight at the time. And I think sometimes that's all we can do. I take advice on, I listen to people and work from people, but sometimes you make mistakes on your own. And ultimately, that is a part of life. It's a part of growth. It's a part of learning. You know, when you're a child, you put your hand in the fire, it burns and you don't do it again. That's all we can do. I think sport is a beautiful allegory for life and like it has the ups, the downs, the emotions, the tears, everything. But all you can do is just be your best self and try your best. And as long as you're doing that, then you're good, right? But that's why I'm like, everybody's concerned and it's lovely and it's cute and it's nice that like they have me in their hearts in a way. Like, and that's why when you talk about pressure and stuff, it's not pressure. It's a beautiful position to be in. And I wouldn't change that for the world at all. And when it's so nice to know when you line up, you have a lot of people that have never met you in your life that want you to just do your best in them for you. For, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's beautiful. So it that's beautiful. Why I would never, never change it for the world.
Headliners is the name of the podcast. Mm-hmm. And with any headline act, and you are a headline act.
On a good day.
You're always a headline act. You're always a class act. There's an encore, right?
Okay.
And these are quick fire questions.
Okay, sounds great.
Right?
No waffling.
No, you haven't waffled at all. What he's talking about? I have perhaps, but you haven't. What was the last piece of music that made you cry?
I've never cried to music in my life.
Serious?
Nah. I cry at movies, not music.
What was the last movie you cried to?
Any rom-com.
serious?
Any rom-com, I cry at TV shows all the time.
So are you super romantic?
This is Us. Okay. This is Us as a TV show. I cried at Succession. I cried at This Is Us. Succession had me bawling. Oh, yeah, I cry all the time at TV. But I don't cry at music.
You cried at Succession?
I did.
What Instagram reels do you regularly share with friends and family? Like, if there was a pattern, if there was a theme, what would it be?
Fashion ones. Last night I was sharing loads and loads of couture. I've got a creative mind. I've got a creative brain, which also I found out later in my life, probably why I am so very, very philosophical, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Last night I was sending out, not friends and family, but people that I know in that space. I was looking at memes of couture when one of the big designers of Schiaparelli, he was going through how he structured all of his couture gowns and like the thought and the storytelling, the history behind it, the history of the house and womanhood and what was messages were being portrayed very much in an artistic way. I was really into those videos and I was just having a moment. I was watching also last night, this is so funny, I was watching, another reel of going through the Maison Margiela show that went viral this year and the people that created that and how they went with their artistry, what kind of historical references they were doing, like I'm a history girl, the Salons of France, the dolls, and even with Gwendolyn Christie doing that, how the amount of time that it took to, across all races, sizes, dress sizes, to tailor each one. I thought it was fascinating.
What genre of music, if it comes on, do you dance most wildly to, like lose your mind to?
Afrobeats.
Oh, of course.
Love Afrobeats.
Okay. If you're trying to impress someone through food, Dina, what dish would you cook? What is the Dina dish?
I can make a really good tarte tatin.
Oh, okay.
It's really easy, actually. Yeah, but I think
do you have a sweet tooth?
French desserts, yeah. But
so
desserts,
wait a minute, so you make things that you can't eat?
Yeah, I've had to slow that down. I used to make loads of cakes and my parents wouldn't used to eat them. I can't eat them, so they'll just be there. I used to love,
would you do Bake Off if you were asked?
I've been asked. I think I got asked when I was at uni. My answer ultimately is I don't know. I got asked when I was uni, I couldn't do it, but I'm so competitive. I'm really kind of, there's always, I have to admit this is a very upfront thing. You don't understand when I get into something, how competitive and
strictly,
how precise I am. Strictly. So I've met Johannes before and I told him, my mum's told me, I mean, I don't know if I would do Strictly firstly, just, you never know how life goes.
For sure.
And I've already met Johannes and I know, like I just said, if we ever do it, we'll do it together. And I will be going out there to win. I know it's a public vote, so I might not win hearts and minds, but the work I would put in, that's what I'm saying. This is why I can't go on these shows.
I just saw your game face.
Yeah, this is
you
why I can't go on these shows. This
face.
Is why I was like, Bake Off, honestly, I would love it. I'd be having the time of my life until I'd be like, I have to win. My brain would just go,
what was the worst trouble you got into at school?
I was really good. I literally never got in trouble. I was
detention?
Really good. No.
So that
come
means,
on.
So that means nowhere
come
near suspended
on.
Then.
My mum and dad got bored with parents' evening. Like my mum literally, I was the opposite. My mum and dad were like, can you just do something? Like, can you just give us an opportunity to like do something? My mum was like, I used to go clubbing like when she was younger. My dad, they used to climb out of windows to sneak out. Like I was very good, very disciplined, went to training. My homework was in on time. Like going to parents' evening, they just said, Dina's great. She gets her homework. She gets good grades. Like she doesn't make a fuss. And my mum was like, I'm not coming to your parents' evenings anymore. I can't be bothered. It's a waste of my time. They're just going to say you're fab and I'm going to go. Like, I just do something, please. Like, give me something to do as a parent.
It's amazing.
When it got to the end, she was like, only book me appointments for things you want to do at uni. Because I can't be bothered to go through everything, go to all these teachers for them to say the same thing for 2 hours that you're great and you get your homework in on time and you get good grades. I'm bored. Like, do something. She's like, let me do my job.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so no, literally, absolutely not.
What was your dissertation on?
It was on jazz. I compared the commercial images, couldn't call it brands because brands didn't exist then, but commercial images of Louis Armstrong and Duke Ellington. And I also took a look on how history remembered them. So basically it was looking at black culture in the time and how it was remembered, and they have very different images.
Dina Asher-Smith, oh my gosh, this has lived up to every single
You're
expectation.
So cute.
This is so good.
It was thoughtful, considered, and it was great. Thank you.
I can't replicate the adrenaline rush that comes from winning 100 metres. But what I can do is feel the rush when you have a conversation, the quality of which I've just had with Dina Asher-Smith, which is by no means a way of bigging myself up. But it is all about just how open she is, how she's overcome adversity, how she has channeled this quite extraordinary competitive force that exists within her to get to the very pinnacle of her sport. Time spent with Dina Asher-Smith is time spent where you come out of the conversation feeling about a foot taller than you did before you went into it.
Remember, if you subscribe to the Headliners podcast, you can hear extended versions of those conversations, like the one I just had with Dina Asher-Smith. Coming up in hour two, a classical music sensation, over a billion streams of his music, Alexis French. Right, time for news and sport.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
With the BBC News on 5 Live, I'm Alison Hughes. The Lebanese Health Ministry says more than 50 people have died in a day of continued Israeli airstrikes across the country. Israel's military has said it believes 20 senior commanders of the Iranian-backed Hezbollah group died in an attack on Friday. The White House National Security spokesman John Kirby told the US network ABC he expects Iran to respond.
Well, their rhetoric certainly suggests they're going to try to do something. I mean, just coming out of Tehran, but we don't really know. We're watching this very, very closely to see how, if and how, Hezbollah and or Iran may react, as well as the militia groups in Iraq and Syria. We have to be prepared for some sort of response. We have to make sure that we are ready, and we are.
The Israeli military has now expanded its operation against Iranian allies, bombing Houthi targets in Yemen. Israel said the targets, including a seaport, were being used by the Houthis to transfer weapons and oil from Iran. The Foreign Office is advising British people in Lebanon to leave immediately. Ministers say they're working with commercial airlines to make sure more flights are available. Ala Galayini, who's pregnant, is one of those who've managed to get out. She arrived in London this morning.
I was seeing buildings being bombed, huge, huge fires, buildings falling down, collapsing. It wasn't just one bomb, it'll be around 20 after each other and people still stuck under rubble. So you smell it all and it's all over the city, no matter how far you are.
An 8-year-old boy has died after suffering gunshot wounds to the head and face at a farm in Cumbria. A man in his 60s has been arrested on suspicion of assault and gross negligence manslaughter. The former Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, has urged his party to stop the squabbling as he addressed the Conservative conference in Birmingham. Mr. Sunak said the conference was a chance to hear from the four Tory leadership contenders, and he urged the party to get behind his successor. This Tory member was among those listening to the speech.
I was actually really surprised about the reaction. It seemed really positive. There was people chanting his name, lots of cheering, which kind of shocked me because, in my opinion, he wasn't a very good leader and we're better off without him. There were people even shouting, like,